It's an ill mind that's still time build and refine. Still getting mine in the nine. Build and refine. Build and refine. Still getting mine in the nine. Build and refine. Still getting mine. Geometric. Nine.
Nine.
Stylus Chris.
Nine. DJ has one. Nine.
Don't touch the dial, you heard.
What's good, everybody? DJ Geometrics here. Monday night, 9 p.m. once again. Welcome back to the 9 at 9 DJ podcast. The only show where we have 9 DJs on a roundtable panel discussing today's DJ topics. Tonight is part 2 of episode 15. Our special guest panel from last week is back here tonight. And you, as y'all already know, our special guests are DJs who are also owner and operators of their own venues. We're going to continue the conversation about, you know, owning nightclubs and bars during this whole time and the future of the nightlife. Nightlife. That's a hard word to say. Nightlife scene.
We'll make it through. Nightlife. Good job.
Nightlife. So, let's go ahead. So give it up one more time for our special guest, Klaxarb, Evil One, Fareed, and DJ Nugget. Yeah.
They back.
And of course, we got the rest of my crew here with me, my co-host DJ As One.
What's up, guys?
You got it right.
I got it right this time.
Hobie, baby.
John Jay.
Yeah. What's up?
And Stylus Chris.
Peace.
Also, filling up the additional square because an unnamed guest couldn't make it is our associate producer, Doc Bluss. So he'll be with us. You actually saw him last week. So we'll get you involved here tonight, man.
He's the man that does all the behind the scenes and nobody gets to see.
The window show, bro. The window.
But if you guys missed last week's episode, you can always watch them again on facebook.com/beatrefinery or youtube.com/beatrefinery. Once again, this show is brought to you by Beat Refinery, DJ School at Bachtarock. Learn how to mix, scratch, and make music by visiting beatrefinery.com. We have school locations all across the nation. So let's get on with the show. And as always, we're going to start it off with another edition of Unpopular Opinion. This is where one of the hosts will bring up an opinion on a particular topic to which most everyone pretty much agrees upon is true, but that host will argue and make a case for the counterpoint or the unpopular opinion of that topic. So,
what do we
on
got?
That note, John Jay,
I'm gonna step into the arena one more time with this
step
one.
Step into the arena. Go for it, man.
I've been waiting for this one. I'm ready for this one. So, I want you guys to think about this in the context of Big Brother and technology. So there's all this talk of the 1985 way our world is transforming and how everything is getting more and more trackable and how everything is getting more and more unpredictable because we don't know who is keeping the information that we have private access to. So we got a little bit of a throwback vibe in the headphones and in the audio side. So I want to paint this picture with a little less ominousness, but I want to consider, and my position is, having this Big Brother mentality is going to allow us to come back into nightlife full swing. However, it might be possible to do this in a good way if you change your perspective on what that looks like. So let's check this out. So everybody got this screen share situation going on right now? I put together, right before we went live here for our show, the 9 at 9, this page of my website. It's unlisted, but if you're able to work around with the technology, you'll be able to figure out how to find this, but this is all live. But this is a proof of concept, and what I've got here, it says for itself. Anybody listening to the audio only version of this, here's what we got written down. The 2020 global pandemic has completely wrecked the nightlife industry. Venues are closing, and those who are still standing need to figure out how to navigate this new normal. So why not try something new based on an old idea? So as we look a little bit further down, we got some pictures of a historical venue known only as the Legendary Paradise Garage. This is a place, and of its era, there were many other places like it, that because there were so few places to go as part of the queer community, LGBTQIA community, that you had to have a membership. You had to know somebody to become part of this group of people that would go to these exclusive venues and clubs. So how do we take that concept and fast forward it? Here's what I think Big Brother has to do with that. Let's scroll down a little bit more. So take some old idea like this, and why not take something like, I don't know, a blank ID card. And what's that underneath? You can combine that with one of these, a QR code. So hypothetically speaking, and for those of you on the audio only portion of this, you're gonna have to check this out on the video version. I'm gonna bring the music down and let's take this full circle. So if you are to take your phone and put it up to a QR code, I literally generated this website within 3 minutes of us going live to do this recording. But here on my screen, this will take you to a one-page website on my website, djshawnj.com, unlisted. Imagine this was a QR code on top of a membership ID. You could put a picture of the person on the other side of it. You could put a barcode that scans to whatever. But however, what if that QR code brought you to an unlisted website on the club's server, and it gave you this, the membership info for the person that has that card. This used to be a thing that even happened in the mid-2000s that I remember. In my old wallets, I have these membership cards from clubs that I've been to all around the country. So what about this idea? Big Brother and all of this technology is publicly available. I want to underline for the second time, all of this took me about 5 minutes to put together, if that. So I have listed here name, let's say membership name, DJ Sean J, member valid through 1st of January 2022, all hypothetical stuff. Last visit to the venue, 11th of March 2020, before everything went crazy. Most recent COVID test. So what if I was to say, hey, Big Brother's tracking when all my medical history was taken, and I got my test done at Johns Hopkins University Hospital here in Baltimore City, and I had a link to Johns Hopkins online because it's trackable, medical history for my most recent test, which is dated. Therefore, the bottom line says club entry approved. So what if for only like 30 cents, 50 cents a person, this allows us to get away from the profit first motive that has allowed so many different nightclubs to take hold of our industry and purely focus on pushing bottles where the music didn't matter. And like we said in the previous episode, in the conversation about culture, this is so, so important to me that we make sure we keep a space for the culture of bringing the right people into these venues. It may be smaller parties for the next couple years, but what if we have a membership model and use the technology available where we can have our parties open back up again? I'm not saying things need to be done unsafely. Everybody can pick their poison on how that gets applied, but this is all free technology. I really want this conversation to be about what possibilities can come out of this. And if you guys think this is a bad idea, let me know, because we are really fortunate to have a panel of owners who might be able to see some other perspectives on this that I would love to hear.
Whoa. I don't think it's a bad idea, but I think it's a complicated idea. And they're already doing this. They've been doing this in China. And the reason why they can even get away with it is because China is a communist country and they are basically the epitome of Big Brother. But in order for us to really track like each person that comes into a place, like in China, they actually do it when they leave their house. They have a QR code on their phone. They get scanned when they leave their apartment, and then every time they go back inside to a building, they have to scan that QR code. But they also get their temperature checked as well every single time, and the thermometer is connected to the QR code to your profile. And if you ever get a temperature reading of 100 degrees or higher, then they basically make you go back home and quarantine again for 14 days. So I think what is complicated is, you know, tracking people's health. I think that's the most complicated thing. Otherwise, I mean, sure, it would be awesome. It would be a great idea.
That's real. Well, what about the idea of to be a member of a club, you have to fill out an application. You're voluntarily like handing over this information. It would be difficult to keep track of all the people with a membership, but what if you've got a smaller population sample to work with?
Well, what's to stop people from like, so part of their membership requires them to go get tested all the time and share those results somehow.
Why not?
Kind of like being an actor in porn or something.
Or, yeah, and I was going to keep this in my back pocket. That's very good. Or there are lifestyle clubs in which members of the club are the only people allowed in. If you have to know somebody currently to get in, they might be swingers clubs. Just throwing that kind of thing out there. This is a thing that could be done because it's working very well in that part of nightlife. It is a subset.
I think one problem in America with doing it is that we don't have universal health care, and Congress right now is trying to appoint a judge that's going to take away pre-existing condition protections for so many people. So like, you are risking it all to go into a nightclub, even if it's members only.
We don't have the point.
And having COVID will be considered a pre-existing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Now, I think in Korea they were doing it as well, right? Where they're
right, they were
testing, and so I don't know if you guys have been familiar, especially the West Coast guys. Have you heard about these parties that have been happening in the Hamptons over the summer, and where it's like super high end, and you wait in the parking lot, and they run everybody gets COVID tested right there on the spot.
Oh, do you get the rapid testing in like 5 minutes thing?
Right there and then once your tests are all clear, you get to come inside, and like people are paying absorbent amounts of money to feel normal, you know, to be able to like hang out with people and not think about COVID for a minute because, you know, all the people you're around are safe based on a test, I guess. And, you know,
why can we provide that to schools and teachers and shit?
Because we're a capitalist.
Great question.
There we go.
It's a very easy answer. It's capitalism, you know.
Totally.
And where, you know, people always wonder why, if you're from another country, when you have a really nasty sickness, most people come to America, because healthcare in America. This is where Republicans get real tricky with this shit. Yes, we do have the best healthcare system if you can pay for it.
If you have the ability to get in first class.
But it's still, even like in Canada and in Europe, when you have like a serious ailment that's like life-threatening, they will come to America because you can pay to get the treatment.
To cut the line.
To cut the line. Exactly it. To get the easy pass. That's exactly it. To go to Disney World and pay the extra and get to the front of the Space Mountain. That's what they want.
We're more focused on like, you know, procedures as opposed to ways to prevent, right?
Totally.
Because, yeah, like, you know, U.S. healthcare is the best as far as like, you know, procedures and operations and, you know, last minute cures or that kind of stuff. But I guess as far as, you know, preventative medicine, that's where we lack a little bit, I think.
Yeah. And you know, and Nugget, you're kind of doing this a little bit with reservations. I mean, you would probably be the closest one to almost be able to implement it.
Yeah. So we do private parties. Right now they were up to 12 people, and it changed yesterday. So now we can do up to 24 people in our bar. But we're doing private reservations because we only want small groups of people that know each other and are tight with each other.
Keep the community insular, of course. Right.
Right. Right. Which is one kind of, I mean, I don't want to say a loophole, but when we sat down and talked about it, we were like, this is probably our safest bet to do this. So the people are still interacting with each other. They have to, you know, we're still following the CDC rules and the state rules fully. So, you know, they have to come in with masks on. We have to have food. We, you know, there's all these different things in play. I could rattle off a million things. I'm sure all you guys have the same kind of thing.
24 people sounds like it's worth it, but 12 people doesn't.
Totally.
Right. Right. But I guess I was going to say, Sean, like, are you talking about like while this is going on right now? Are you talking about 3 years from now? If the public is still scared of being around large groups,
that's the way I'm picturing this. This would be a solution because right now with there being like no normalcy, we can kind of lay the foundation for these new ideas and taking that inspiration of, all right, well, if people feel shaky about nightclubs, it's a club. You have to have a membership to come in. Here's what you got to do for this particular club's membership. Or the same thing could be done on a larger scale once we're a few years down the line and there is an available vaccine and all of these other things that would have to be in place for society to function. At least that's the way I'm seeing it.
Well, and also like, I laugh at people that carry around their iPhone and then say like, I don't want Big Brother following me.
Yeah, come on.
And you're just like, it's here. As they go through their easy pass on the highway, and you're like,
it's 2007.
Like, lock your house with a smart lock.
Like, B, like,
got their GPS
like,
on.
We are so far past that. Like, we are already, unless you're going to live completely off the grid and do away with your real ID and do away with your credit cards, like, we're already in the Big Brother system. There's nothing really more. What you're doing is you're playing sheer numbers based on there's a government this big and there's a population this big. And as long as you're not creating crazy havoc and trying to blow up shit, they don't really care. They really don't. They could give two shits if I was going down the street and I snuck out for a second and did something slightly illicit and came back, as long as I wasn't harming anybody. You know, that's the reality. It's like, how many of us read the crazy conspiracy books when we were 20 years old and we're like, oh, Big Brother's coming on us. Then you realize, man, it's really not, as long as you're not trying to create a mafia. And like, what does Big Brother even really mean? What does it mean if you have a cell phone, a bank account, a social security number? You're already in, B.
You're already in the system.
You're already in. So if it was to allow us to have safety and normalcy and like, you know, I think about places like Jose Andres's Mini Bar, one of the most famous restaurants in the world. It has 6 seats at it. That's all it has. But when you go there, you experience something beyond anything. And granted, like, this is, you know, unfair to this is feeding into capitalism because it's only people that can afford the $400
plate.
Experience.
Hence the party, like, in the Hamptons, right?
Right, hence the party in the Hamptons. But like, when you're able to have venues like you guys have where you're already taking that approach mentally, why can't you apply it now in the world where we live in, where people actually would say, you know what, I do put a value and appreciate, you know how much people pay to go to watch LeBron James play basketball? I mean, you take your kids and your wife to any sporting event, you're dropping $400 before you know it on the tickets, on the food, on the parking. So if a venue like Bruno's or a venue like Tube or a venue like Goldmark or 18th Street Lounge can provide something that is an experience beyond the norm, I think there's a market for it. And I don't think it's outlandish to ask for it, right, because people do it already.
Can I throw
LeBron to DJ?
one more idea to this, and part of the inspiration behind the way I wanted to present the idea of having smart cards or QR codes to track people is we've already kind of seen that work for years and years and years with like sets like Boiler Room, where you fill a room full of people that are standing visibly around the DJ because they want to experience something they're not going to experience in a normal party. I had this kind of romantic vision in my mind, and none of this is supposed to be inflammatory, but that we can take control of the fact that there is no ground to firmly stand on right now and create the foundation ourselves But I'm not a venue owner, so I don't know what other considerations there go in.
Right. I mean, and I'll put it this way quickly, and then I would like to hear you guys kind of give us some insight into what you think you might do new or different as we move forward from now into the future. But a guest of ours a couple weeks ago, Nate Nelson, said, instead of trying to think about how you're going to continue your business as it was, think about how you're going to build your business the way you want it to be. And you have the opportunity to do that, which was a pretty poignant statement to kind of think of that and those lights. And like, what would you guys, you know, what, just thinking even like maybe not necessarily, you know, complete X's and O's, but what are some things you guys would implement moving forward?
I mean, is the dance floor dead now after this and table service multiplies standard. Like basically like, you know,
that's my worst nightmare.
Separated.
I know.
Just tables.
Well, shout out to Shecky Green for like a few episodes back when he was describing the scene in Tokyo and in Japan, how they have very small clubs with like the six seats, right, and it's exclusive, but you get that intimate experience. I feel like we might be leaning that way.
Can I tell you guys a little bit about how we ended up doing the private party thing?
Go for it. Yeah.
So it took forever, and we were literally talking about doing 12 people for a private party, and just going through, I mean, you guys, you own venues, and then you have to figure out like what your overhead is and where you stand at. And it's like, what Chris was saying before at Bruno's, what's the point of even opening if it doesn't make any sense? You know, it's almost kind of like, you know, when my wife and I sat down to talk about it, we thought we were going to be able to figure it out really quick. And it ended up being like a 4-hour conversation sitting at our dining room table, just with a million pages of notes. Like, what if we did this? And what if we did this? And we boiled it down to like a certain, you know, formula, and the formula worked. But like I just said a little bit ago, like the formula is already, this is the crazy thing. We got it down. We had it down where we were like, okay, how do we make people feel safe? How do we still make a couple bucks to make everything make sense for us? And how do we make sure make people, you know, still have a fun time with 12 people being in the bar? So we kind of had it all figured out, but then I'll never forget, my wife was like, what happens in 2 weeks when this all changes again? So right at that point, it was just like, okay, all the work that we just put into that. And then we're actually dealing with that as of yesterday here, because that I just, like I mentioned last week, the federal judge had ruled in favor of the hospitality groups here, and basically that saying that it was unconstitutional, even though we're dealing with a pandemic where everybody's getting sick. You know, I have my own views on it. You guys obviously have your own views on it too. I think we're kind of all in the same space as far as that goes with keeping our customers and
we care about people.
Exactly. But on the flip side, I see a lot of people that don't. I see a lot of people that don't care. And I see a lot of people that don't think it's real. And, you know, not to go off on a tangent, but how do you
push back against that? Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah. Anyway, sorry.
No, that's good stuff, man. I mean, and I think, you know, for the most part, you're kind of doing what has to be done, thinking forward. And, you know, this is something, you know, most people don't know, but, you know, you're one of these rare guys that, in the sense that not only do you own your business, but you own the venue, like you own the property. And, right. And I wanted to ask this question to the other three, like, as you guys move forward in your careers as nightclub owners, venue owners, would you consider, has this all opened you up to saying like, you know what, if I'm going to get another venue, I have to own the building too, if I'm going to do it?
We already own our building, actually.
Oh, nice.
There's another
one. That's part of the reason why I'm not like, you know, scrambling and making decisions based on trying to pay my rent. But we still have a mortgage to pay, and we still have a building that's worth something that could be, you know, that could be sold, and did something else. I mean, we, you know, just because motorcycle driving by, just because we own the building doesn't mean there isn't a lost opportunity cost, and it doesn't mean we're not losing money by, you know, by not selling it and rolling that money into something that can actually earn us an income right now. Right now, it's just a building that's just sitting there doing nothing.
And until, you know, somebody buys it, it's not an asset.
Right. Exactly. Right. You know, it's not a mixed use building or anything like that. It doesn't have apartments up top or offices or anything. It's just a lone space. And so, you know, we are very fortunate that we own the building, but at the same time, it's like, we might just have to decide to sell it if it, you know, we've see that the outlook is not great as far as Bruno's is concerned. But I mean, even before,
it's a hell of a parachute though.
Hell yeah.
It is. And that's the thing is that, you know, I'm always looking for new places, always looking for new venues to open and buildings, you know, to buy and to get some investors together. It's always ideal to own the building. Always. Mm. Either that or just, you know, find a place where the contract and the rent is super cheap. But I think that our businesses are always just kind of a product of the times and product of our limitations. And when you talk about like building your ideal place and what we want it to be in the future, I mean, like I kind of did that with Bruno's, you know? Like I really like built it into the place that I wanted it to be. It's just kind of like this place where it kind of looks like somebody's house and the DJs are just having fun and playing, you know, whatever they want to, and people are coming in and know what to expect. And, you know, I try not to say no to anybody. So, you know, it's just like, you're just coming into my house. And if I were to try to imagine something else, and honestly, it would just depend on what my limitations are. So I don't know. I don't have that, you know, outlook right now. The limitations are obviously the health reasons, but like there, it's the law. Like I'm not allowed to open right now. But if I was allowed to open, and even if there was still a pandemic going on like there is now, like if I announced that I was going to open this weekend, I don't even think I would have a problem being busy, mm-hmm. at all. You know, the right. So right now the limitations aren't that people are afraid of a pandemic. The limitations are that legally I'm not allowed to open.
Right.
But I wouldn't open.
Because you care.
Yeah. Cause even if they would say like, hey, go ahead, go at it, you would still say that's irresponsible.
It's irresponsible. Right.
Yeah.
Irresponsible.
And I think that goes back to like kind of what Fareed, like that was your whole thing, is you felt like it wasn't responsible to sign another 5-year lease fiscally, but also
right.
personally.
Yeah. As a human. And, you know, as you're now looking at the next chapter, is that something that you would consider as like actually taking the real estate? With what you've been through, I mean, for those that didn't see the last episode or don't know the story of 18th Street Lounge, this is a 25-year-old venue in the same location that lets everybody know business is business, and it doesn't matter how long you've been a liable tenant that never missed your rent. When it comes to things like this, a landlord acts like they don't know you anymore, you know, and that's the cold truth.
You know, as Chris mentioned, like a lot of this has to do with the other side as well. You know, they also own a mortgage as well, right? So they have a bank to deal with. Who knows what they're dealing with? But you know, I just say, you know, just to follow up on the idea of like you know, having a membership club and that kind of a concept. I think a lot of it has to do with the law. If the law allows the venue to open at all, because as far as you know, clubs they're not allowed to open regardless of anything. So, you know, if there's any flexibility on that end, which would have been one of the things I was going to do if I had stayed at that location at the EFL, is to kind of like, you know, take the nightlife aspect away and the energy away, make it more of a cocktail experience, a date experience, which seems like it's a majority of the folks who are out and about, or people like on dates, on first dates, whatnot. So that could be, I think you could kind of doubt for a while, but you know, if you're not allowed to open, you're not allowed to open. So that's kind of out of the way. But as far as like real estate, I think it would be it's the ideal case to own a real estate as opposed to paying rent. Obviously, you know, you pay like your mortgage is less than rent most of the time, and you build equity, so that's kind of like a no-brainer. But I think coming out of this, there's going to be some pretty interesting opportunities down the road, at least as far as availability. But I'm not sure if that's going to be able to translate into lower pricing, lower rents. I don't know. You know, commercial real estate in DC kind of acts in a weird way.
Insulated more than most cities, because of the government structure.
There seems to be like a flood of office space, but they still, you know, are charging pretty high rates. So
yeah,
I'm not sure what the formula is, but I think eventually be the most ideal opportunity, you know, kind of a scenario to own the location and to operate in it. But then again, you know, the concept of the operation would also really depend on the building and the location. So it's kind of hard to take an idea and be able to fit it in any location, right? Like that's.
Yeah, you can't shoehorn a place to feel the same as 18th Street Lounge after 25 years.
No.
You got to go with what that space is, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Area. And the timing too, right? I mean, you know, we're not, you know, like a lot of change is going to happen between now and a full reopening, say a year and a half, 2 years. Where it's full capacity, right? You know, but
if I could add something to that, you know, I know that we made in DC at least like a significant effort to try and have that rent frozen to support the culture and to support this venue, and not just the 18th Street Lounge, which is this iconic venue and mixing pot of music and culture and a home for so many, you know. There are many venues around DC also that are suffering right now.
Sure.
And it's unfortunate that no one made that decision to freeze rent or to support for a little bit longer, at least here. Whereas in other places, like I have friends and people in the community in Asunción, Paraguay, where rent was frozen, and it's very different there, you know. They're just waiting right now, but mm-hmm. things have been put on hold.
Sure. Yeah, you know, here in DC, what came out of that mostly was just the deferment, which kind of you pay, you know, once things open back up. So that's you build like a nice amount of debt.
Deferment is like the drive-through. What was it? Where you could put your car title in and get a loan. I mean,
it's not really doing you a huge favor.
No,
you're kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, yeah. You're
breaking your toe every time you kick that shit.
And that's where, you know, all this sort of a building comes into play, because, you know, my idea, you know, my top, like, okay, how do you expect me to pay your rent when I can't earn a dollar? You know, I'm not allowed. It's illegal.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's actually illegal to open. And that's where
it makes no sense.
And that's where it's bugged out. And we've had lots of guests throughout New Zealand and Italy and all the different guests we've had on in their other countries. It's like it's night and day what they're doing for their society, let alone the nightclubs and the DJs and protecting them and taking care of art. And it's just like it's a whole nother. It's a whole another universe that they get to experience.
You know,
well, I mean, we did this in 2008, you know, we bailed out all these banks and stuff. And I see no reason why it couldn't have just been the same way, you know, like you basically, you put a moratorium on rent and mortgage, and then you just bail out the banks. So if the if the landlord doesn't have to pay his mortgage, then he doesn't have to charge rent.
That's right.
And also, like, it could just be something where, like, you know, if you're a business and you can prove that you're not allowed to open, then you can say, well, listen, I'm not allowed to open, so, you know, my rent's deferred. Or if you're a landlord and say you can prove that, you know, your tenant can't pay rent, then you can get a bailout. It could have been something so easy that would have helped so many people, even if they would have done it for just 6 months. It would have been a massive, you know, it would have been a massive help. But here in the Bay Area, and, you know, especially in San Francisco, restaurants are closing every day. You know, we talk about, I mean, nightclubs and bars and stuff like that. I mean, of course, but, you know, restaurants, you know, the whole entire restaurant industry together is actually a very big industry.
Yeah.
And if that whole thing collapses, there are going to be so many people.
Everybody's got to eat.
Right.
It's like 5% of GDP.
Yeah. And Eric, with you, I mean, five venues. I mean, and I remember when you were just one venue and two venues, and the next thing it was like, they were just, it was like popcorn. Like, they were just popping off, and you were just all of a sudden owner operator of just multiple venues. How does that
popping up,
you know, you,
everywhere.
Boing, here's another one.
Nice
that's,
touch.
That's such navigation that you got to go through in this. And how do you think, you know, what would your perspective change as you're moving forward? Do you think that it's time to look into more same thing, kind of owning the buildings? And
yeah, we've been trying to buy the building that Tube is in for the 7 years that we've had the bar. And for backstory on that project too, I DJed there in 2001, and it was like one of my favorite places I've ever DJed. And so when I came back to Portland after living in LA for a few years, I was like, Tube's for sale, I'm going to take it over. And we did, and it was in a really bad place, it was falling apart. So we put like years of energy and money into making this place better. And we're negotiating with our landlord the whole time, like, hey, we want to buy the building. And every time we'd get close to a deal, he'd raise the price on us.
Oh, man.
And so now here we are, like, he expects more rent, and it's just like, why continue down this? But I would say going forward, if I did sign a new lease on a place, there would definitely need to be a clause in it of like, here's the use that we're taking it over for. And if we can't fulfill that use for some reason, there's either a way to get out of the lease or some sort of a pause on the rent. Because it's like, who's going to sign a lease knowing what can happen in the last 6 months, like in the future? Why would you do that?
That could be a really good, I guess, write-in, an impossibility clause that covers
totally
stuff.
I think we're going to see a lot of that, especially with what's been going on with like insurance liability
and insurance that's going on with
bars and restaurants. Yeah.
Totally.
And you know, it's back to Chris's point, like, we've talked about this several times and how if the entire global economy just shut down for like 24 days back in March, early April, like, I'm talking complete, you know, what is the United Nations worth? What do they actually do if they couldn't in the time of a calamity like this step in with the IMF and everybody, all markets? I mean, they did it so successfully in Korea where like everybody was literally locked in and like the government coming through and bringing you groceries. Because if you would just do this for 18 days, you could try to get back to normal life. And here we are still, you know, 6 months plus, and we're still waning back and forth and never actually had the ability to just suck it up.
You can't tell Americans do shit.
Yeah, I mean, as a human race, like, everybody suck it up. Like, everybody is equal for 1 minute. You're all on the fucking Titanic. It's sinking, and we're totally. all just gonna say
violins
that
violins are playing matters. Now. We're the ones playing the violins.
Yes, we're the ones.
I think a huge part of the problem is that because we're so divided, and you know, there's still so many people in the country that literally don't
die in charge.
Don't think it's real. That don't think wearing a mask is actually just killing them. Yeah. You know,
but like one guy tried to blow up a plane with a shoe 20 years ago, and we still take our shoes off at the fucking airport. It's like, it's insane. 200,000 people have died, and half of America has fucking dildos on their mask saying, like, you're taking my rights away. It's like, dude, what? Like,
a lot of our industry could have been saved or not, could have been, you know, like in this kind of situation where if there was like laws and regulations that was kind of coming from the top, you know, federal, where, as you know, Chris mentioned, as far as like you can have a 6 month period of work abatement, you know, from the federal government, and but there hasn't been anything because it's again, you know, who's the most influential group in an urban area? It's mostly developers. So they are running this show. You know, the mayors are just saying, yes, okay, we'll, you know, push the eviction dates down the road or whatnot, right? But as far as abatement or, you know, and any kind of aid that's going to go to the businesses are actually going back to the landlords.
Totally.
Yeah. So that's, you know, it's as long as they're being made full, the rest, it doesn't matter.
Right.
So that's what it is, you know, and because we don't have it's like a leadership, and there's no actual like real laws and regulations from the government. It's all hodgepodge, and you know, mayors can do as much as they can, right? But they can't make, you know, developers lose money. So that's
and at the end of the day, the cities, the tax that they absolutely count on, guaranteed, know is coming is the building taxes. And it's like sales tax comes and goes, and sure, that fluctuates. But where the bread is buttered is right on the property tax that hits twice a year in most places, and so they're naturally gonna cater to the building owners, and you can't necessarily blame them. It's not it's not the fault. It's just like, you know, Nugget and Chris who own their buildings, like their mortgage companies are still like, you know, I'm proud of you, buddy, but you still got to pay the mortgage. It's like, there's it doesn't stop unless it stops from the top, and you know, we're gonna certainly have to figure it out.
One of a lack of leadership is the whole insurance company. So you know, we could, you know, the government could have just bailed out one industry if they paid out all the businesses and all their policyholders, right? But that's huge case right now in the course, probably like another eight years or 10 years, and then we'll get to get some kind of resolution. But, you know, if the insurance company paid out all the business interruption policies cases, the government could have just bailed out one industry and it would have worked out, right? Or it would work out a lot easier or smoother, but now it's a lot of press, and I think we're going to get lost. You know, it's for the folks who own the buildings or in areas where we can still operate, right? Like in Pittsburgh and, you know, Portland, we can still operate and earn some kind of income, but in maybe like, you know, larger areas, New York, DC, LA, I don't know. You know, we can't operate where it's illegal, even open for like a private event or for like, you know, 10, 12 people. That's going to be tough to continue.
Crazy.
Yeah. Everybody's got to pay $500 at the door.
Off that cover.
Steep cover. Oh, wait, I'm short. ATM's around the corner.
I got $475.
You must need to like sell admission on eBay and have it be an auction.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you know, the thing is, and it goes back to what I was trying to say before, is like, you know, people do pay this kind of money for experiences, and like, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that people that really care about music and really care about what they're delivering have a ability to charge for that experience. I think there's plenty of people that would actually say, how is that different than the Kennedy Center? How is that different than going and seeing Hamilton? Honestly, I mean, you know, to me, if I hear a really great DJ who's playing all these different amazing songs in a night, and if you really pair it with food on top of it, like really curated proper food, that's an experience. That's like, you know, hearing Michael Jackson is like watching LeBron dunk. It's the same kind of thing. It's like what you're into, you know? So, you know, will we be able to find a way to navigate into a new space? Because, you know, the reality is at some point, if you're not there yet and you're not backs it completely against the wall, it's probably going to come against the wall at some point. Because none of this.
The problem with that idea, though, is that, like, you know, you're assuming that everybody can just provide their own experience and charge whatever money they can to, you know, make enough money for that experience. But, like, there's something to be said for leaving out whole swaths of our population that don't have a lot of money to, you know, yes, to go and do those things. And, you know, part of what I felt was like the ideal, like magic of what Bruno's was that I wasn't necessarily catering to one, you know, demographic, because if you know anything about San Francisco, you know that the income disparity there is crazy, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, part of the reason why nightlife was decimated in San Francisco was because of it was just filled with a bunch of tech workers that work every day from Monday through Friday. They don't go out, and when they do go out, they're not really going out to clubs. And all of the artists and all the people that had any good taste and all of the variety just left the city. Mm. And, you know, in order to maintain like a culture and the arts and all that stuff, you kind of have to be as inclusive as possible. And if you're talking about like a bar or a nightclub or anything like that, like, you know, maybe there's a nightclub for rich people. Maybe there's a nightclub for people that aren't as rich, whatever, but you have to have something for everybody. Mm. If you don't, then the whole culture, the whole scene is going to be completely homogenous, and we won't progress culturally. We won't, you know, be innovative in the arts, music, all that stuff. So I kind of just think that like we have to, you know, try to find a way to include as many people as possible.
Well, what if you're including them through a live stream?
That was a nice segue to a point I wanted to make.
That's what I see, like, going to, if you go to the stadium, you go to watch LeBron in person, yeah, it costs something, but like if you still want to see him, you watch him on TV. Like, mm-hmm. I was kind of curious and I think Sean, you were bringing it up too, just like, you know, I know a lot of you guys have watched you live stream. I've seen you guys. Freed, you have the 18th Street Lounge channel where you're allowing all the residents to live stream on it. And like, is live streaming going to be like another aspect of experience in your venues? Like, do you see that playing into it in any degree?
D-Nice created culture and everybody jumped on, but
not if we still have to deal with the same copyright laws that we have to deal with now.
No doubt.
There's just no way.
But you're paying ASCAP licenses at your venue, right?
They don't care.
Yeah, they don't
seriously
care.
Oh, come on.
Oh yeah, I talked to our rep and they were like,
geez. Yeah, because you're using a different
medium.
You're not recording this, even if you're not recording it and you're not like, you know, maybe putting it on in an archive, it's just live for the night. I don't know exactly what you mean by what's it calling. I'm just assuming like there's like,
yeah, but if you're on your private server, it's not like a Facebook or whatever. It's
yeah,
tube.com or it's Bruno's SF.com.
That's what I'm saying.
United we stream.
When you pay ASCAP and you pay BMI and you pay all these licensing companies, your fee is determined by your capacity.
Right, right.
We're going to hear it. If you're live streaming and your
unlimited capacity.
Your potential capacity.
But you're still able to say, hey, we have this amount, our licenses for what if, and reason I'm saying this, because I think that we have to have these conversations of how we can keep really great venues open and really great DJs and really great club owners operating.
It's culture like, doesn't die.
So it doesn't die. So that it's like the music can still be played, because I'm not sure Bruno's is going to make it if in 18 months we're still stuck in this predicament. You might sell the venue.
Right.
I don't know if Eric's going to be able to keep these places open. Freed's already made one move. Nugget's already closed one spot, holding on to another spot. Like, do we have to implement other ways? Are we going to have to go back to the table and get a license that says my venue is this for ASCAP, and then I've purchased a license to live stream at this capacity where it's only, okay, I'm only doing 1,000 people, and that charges X amount per quarter, the way ASCAP bills, which is a whole nother scam, because we know ASCAP isn't asking for what songs you played. So they're just taking the money and giving it to an unproprietary version of where they think the money should go. You could be an underground club playing all deep house and they're paying Katy Perry the money.
Right.
You know, that's true. They're not making you bring a log list of what you're playing. So it's already completely bullshit and arbitrary.
Yeah.
To what they do.
Yeah.
So it's like, are we able to say, like, you know what? I live in DC. And one of the things that I envy is that I don't get to go to Bruno's, because all my friends in San Francisco say, man, like, this is the spot. And like, well, that's cool. Oh shit. Evil One is playing there tonight as a special guest. I'm going to live stream. I'm going to sit down like I normally would do when I watch Eric play. And I'm going to chill. And is that the way that we're going to have to translate the experience to
it might
find be, a way to exist?
It might be, but at the same time, I mean, pandemics historically don't last forever, right. And this one, it won't either, you know. And we, you know, we're thinking about it in terms of having to change our business model and the way things are. But honestly, I mean, I think it's going to last longer than we want it to. But at the same time, 2-3 years down the line, which is a small scale in the scope of history,
yeah,
it'll be kind of just back to normal. Like, you'll be able to go to a bar or a nightclub, eat out restaurants again. You know, I think that, you know, it's just going to go back to how it's been for the last, you know, 100 years. So. Yeah.
I had a really interesting conversation recently, though, where I pinballed that idea that you just said, Chris, with what if it doesn't? And it was, the conversation basically went like, okay, I said, I don't think anything's ever going to replace people being out interacting with each other. And to be perfectly honest with you, I still don't really think anything's going to be able to completely replace that. I think you guys probably would agree with me on that.
That's because we know it. But what if you don't know it?
But if you, that's where the conversation went. And my buddy was like, but if you're young and you go through this, maybe it alters your complete identity of what going out even means. And maybe that's going to be expected to be able to go online and watch somebody stream a set because they don't want to be in a group, you know, a huge place with a bunch of people in it. And maybe that's, maybe it completely shifts nightlife as we know it to where the younger generation is like, yeah, we don't want any parts of that. Maybe this pandemic dies out, and then in another couple of years, there's another one, which scientists say that is a likely
possible,
you know, scenario. Yeah. But, you know, I've talked about the live stream thing so many times over the last few months. I've done it myself a few times, and obviously I try to tune into other people doing their thing. And, for me, I think I'm torn because I think it could play a great role, just like you were saying, Chris, with like, you want to see what's going on at Bruno's. And if, you know, if Eric was playing there and like, it gives you an option of something else to do, to experience that you wouldn't get to experience normally, which I think is great. But the other thing as a business owner is I'm like, does it take away from my business? Does it pull customers away where they're like, yeah, I mean, I can do that any night. Why would I go there? I can just get on my iPad and stream whatever DJ, like, you know. So I don't know. It's just
that's no. Everything. I mean, and this is like this is all the stuff that we just don't know, and it's like you know, we're kind of just spitballing here. But I have to go back to sports, and like Eric, you're a big sports guy. It's like watching your Trailblazers center court, or watching them on your 55-inch at home. They're both equally kind of comfortable, depending on where you are that day.
You know, I'm a little antisocial when I'm not DJing, so I like the home element to it too. But as somebody who also does from time to time still enjoy going to a nightclub, I love the mystery of like not being able to see in and know what you're walking into until that door opens and you're like, is it Kraken? Is it dead? Oh shit, it's Kraken. Awesome. And like, I don't know. There's something magical about that you just can't recreate sitting at home. And also when someone's at home, they can choose to get on Netflix, or they can, you know, hit Tinder to like meet people and stuff. Like, I don't know. I feel like the competition is just so much more broad than like the bar that's around the corner now. It's like you're competing for just getting people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like
in the future,
I mean, like going back to like, you know, what's we were talking about, like the mentality of like the younger generation, like they're most likely gonna have like less tendency to like actually go out to nightclubs than, you know, like, you know, like people 10-20 years ago, because of the whole technology thing too, like, you know, like they're, I mean, the reason why a lot of people go to the nightclubs is to meet people.
meet people.
Exactly. So now it's like with the whole Tinder and like the technology, you know, the dating apps, it's so much easier for them to like find people and just hook up with them quickly, you know, instead of like, you know, paying $20 at the door. You know,
do it organically. Yeah.
Can't come up with those shoes. $40 inflation.
But we still haven't seen that super shift in where people don't want to be social, you know? The question is almost like, is the pandemic the shift that pushes it where it's like, does the younger generation feel comfortable being social with each other now?
I mean, the younger generation has something even more different than what we had. We grew up going to concerts and stuff, but like the festival, I guess, like festivals are huge now. That's what kids know.
Yeah.
Kids know, go out, huge crowds, like
Bonnaroo.
Wear weird shit and just be weird for the internet, like, and have a good time, you know, like that's their vision, or like their new normal of going out to a public social music gathering, you know. Nightclubs are definitely one of those things that I feel like it's like a 50-50. Once you become that age of being able to be legal to go out, you get like, you know, not everybody leans toward wanting to jump into the nightlife right away. Some people have to get dragged and pulled into that as they grow older, you know. And I don't know. It's weird, man.
Well, I mean, to you know, if we're still stuck in this, you know, within the next 6 months or a year, the ones that still have like venues, like, do you think you guys are gonna evolve into going into the restaurant business, just so you can like, you know, just
have some money coming in,
or getting
a restaurant? And there's no money coming in a restaurant. Restaurants are the hardest way to make
the
money.
Restaurant business.
Hell no.
Food and
beverages.
It's so hard. The margins are terrible, and I mean, I respect it. I just can't. You know,
the labor's so high.
If you would ever have the choice between having just a bar or a nightclub that, you know, like Bruno's, that basically crushes it for 4 hours a night, two nights a week or three nights a week, versus a restaurant that has to open every day, 12 hours a day, you know, you could just see the difference.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just really depends. But like going back to going back to like we're kind of like imagining pre-pandemic times that like every club was like packed you know what I mean? Like, how many clubs have we been to that weren't even packed to begin? You know, like,
totally. Too many to name.
It's never easy. It's never easy. Just true. Having a nightclub, you know, a year ago,
before this place was really struggling.
You know, so
that's real.
There weren't actually in San Francisco. I mean, there were a few nightclubs, and not all of them were packed. You know, a lot of bars were packed, but as far as having a nightclub, they just weren't.
Yeah. So, especially bottle service. I feel like there's just been a huge shift from that.
Right. Exactly. And no matter what, whether it's, you know, after a pandemic or during a pandemic or before the pandemic, the best places were the ones that were innovative, or at least if they weren't innovative, then they just did everything they did well. And I don't think that's going to change. You know, after this, we may have to like tweak a few things here and there, our business model, but the ones that are creative and innovative and they continue to do those things are going to be the ones that be successful. And there's going to be a bunch of other ones that try to do the same thing and they're going to be dead. Just like the clubs that were dead before. It's no different.
Right. Yeah. There seems to be less and less demand for nightclubs. I guess you say you can say it as a culture with it, which makes it more and more competitive. So used to have, you know, like in DC, there used to be like maybe three, four in the hot clubs, right? But then, you know, towards the last maybe 5 or 6 years, maybe like one hot club, right? And that hot club would be good maybe 2 nights a week as opposed to like, let's say 4 nights, right? So, you know, bars are huge. You know, culturally, I think a lot of the, you know, our age group was like really attached, you know, to the club scene. A lot of it had to do with the music too. So that there was they kind of went hand in hand. Now, the younger generation don't have any musical attachment to a club. You know, like we used to hear what we wanted to hear only if we went to clubs.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
Great point.
Our attachment in like, okay, I can hear this music in this club. It won't be in the radio.
Right, right.
Now it's a whole other story. Yeah. Like it's on their phones. There's no attachment to the scene. It's a club. There's a culture. It's really about, you know, experience, a birthday, a date, you know, want to go dancing with our friends. That's what the market is. You don't see like regulars as much as you used to see where like music heads, because there's no need for that. You don't need to go to clubs all the time and to hear music or DJs or bands, right? It's only on your phones. You get all these, you know, algorithms. So that really kind of takes away from demand. But I think there's always will be demand, but a lot less.
And that means, I mean, hopefully what it does is it allows the places that do it really well,
right,
to be the ones left standing. The ones like you guys that care about the music, that care about the scene, the culture, the quality.
Innovation, whoever's innovative and creative and kind of staying ahead of the curve will be in business. And then you have a bunch of people who just emulate them.
And it's strange how business works in that way, where like all of a sudden there becomes more clubs than there are people to fill the clubs. When like, you know, maybe 5 years before it was like everything's so packed, and that makes money, investors, guys that are trying to be, you know, next, kick it into their next part of their life, like, hey, let's open a club, it's the right time. And then all these people did it, and then you're like, wait, we can't. Now there's like, there used to be 7 clubs, now there's 70. You know, literally,
that's how we had all the restaurants that turned into,
right, everybody wanted to be a part of that. Like, and I think, you know, a lot of it came from like the Vegas style of, you know, all these venues becoming bottle service and flashy, and people going for that experience, or seeing, you know, the rise of the DJ the same way, like the chef, like cooking industry, chef and the DJ, definitely that those industries kind of blew up at the same time of having like their, like where people knew who the chef was at a restaurant, or who the DJ was at a restaurant, or who, you know, TS was coming to town, or Wolfgang Puck opened a new restaurant, or whatever, however you want to correlate it. It was certainly this thing where you've got all these venues and this DJ culture But then, you know, the same way that that DJ Hero became a video game and people were like, oh my gosh, there's going to be a billion DJs now because of DJ Hero. It's like, nah, not really so much. And it kind of pulls back to where in America, it's like, I think, Eric, you were saying that. It's like there's 1,000 choices you can make for every second of your life in every different direction, where that's kind of why Europe and South America and Asia have a lot more attachment to their club scene, because there's not so many options of where, especially like maybe 20 years ago in Europe, it was like there was football and there was music and that was it. And like every person you would ever talk to, it was like they could tell you every standing and every stat of every footballer, and they would tell you like all the dope DJs. And
wait, you mean soccer, right?
Yes.
Just making sure.
I appreciate
clarifying for our international
viewers. Just want to clarify for those that are wondering.
You don't call an NFL guy a footballer.
Egg baller.
Egg baller.
Well, I mean, I think DJing certainly, I mean, became a bubble, and maybe this was just the thing that just popped the bubble. You know, I mean, there's a saying. The saying in like the stock market, like if your taxi driver is giving you stock tips, then you should get the hell out. And if your mom knows who A-Track is, then maybe like DJing is not cool anymore or something.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I've always said that, man. I've always said that. Yeah. If my parents or my grandmother is like, oh yeah, A-Track and Craze tonight. I'm like, man, this is not cool anymore.
You know? Dad's in a Hawaiian shirt with his chest out and a Jesus piece.
That's the only let's be honest. That's the only reason why I feel slightly cool is because my dad.
That's the best shirt.
Well, guys, that hour flew by quickly.
What? Hey, can I say something real quick?
Sure.
Yeah.
I just really, I'd be beside myself if I didn't thank Fareed for 18th Street Lounge for all those years.
Oh my God, yes.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
I didn't even get a chance to like say thank you, man, but I living in Pittsburgh, 4-hour drive. I would go there on Sundays to see Sam the Man all the time. I don't know if you know this guy. I've talked to Chris about this before. I don't know if you know a good friend of mine. His name's Jeremy Roberts, Jay Roberts. He used to.
Okay.
He's a really good friend of mine. Grew up in Pittsburgh. He lives out in L.A., but he played for you for years out there. But anyway, thank you.
Okay, sure. Cool.
Bruno's, man. Chris, I hope I get to come up and see you at some point. And Eric, hey, it's weird that I still haven't been to Portland in the last decade to been to one of your spots.
Come through, man. Let's go.
I know. And same for all you guys. And all the DJs, of course, Sean, Gio, good to see you again as one. Anyway, sorry. Thank you.
No, man.
That needed to be said. Thank you, Nugget, for putting that in there.
Thank you.
Sure. Awesome to meet everybody. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. So once again, give it up one more time for our special guest, Chris, a.k.a. Klaxarb.
Klaxarb.
DJ Evil One, Fareed, and DJ Nugget.
Hey.
Thank you guys again all for being here.
Thank you.
Like I mentioned before, the past couple of weeks, the Beat Refinery DJ School is offering virtual workshops this fall. The next workshop is DJ Throwdowns, utilizing samples to enhance recordings and DJ performance. That's happening this coming Thursday, October 8th, at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. East Coast time. So once again, register at beatrefinery.com or just go to the link on the screen. DJ Aswan and Silas Chris are also hosting and teaching their own virtual workshops after that.
Sorry.
That's a loud one.
Is it the chat?
But yeah, it's a couple, weeks after joke. That. And, you know, it happens every Thursday, every two Thursdays. So once again, check the link on the screen for more details. So
taught by some real DMC world champs. These guys are really good teachers, for real.
Exactly. But if you for all people listening on the podcast or watching at home, if you prefer to listen to the audio side of things, this episode is going to be uploaded this Thursday to Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you consume and listen to all things podcast. So be sure to subscribe and rate us and tune in with us next week, next Monday at 9 p.m., we have a new episode with a new set of DJs on the guest panel. So with that, folks, thank you once again for watching.
Stay safe. And make sure to go to these venues.
Exactly.
Yes. Support when we can.
These are the places that you want to go. These are the people you want to hang out with.
If I show up, please let me in, guys.
Right to your Congress people and vote and vote.
Vote, vote.
Yes, vote. Today, yeah.
Register to vote.
Absolutely. Black Lives Matter. Wear a mask.
Right to your Congress people. Oh, yeah. Again, stay safe.
Tell your parents you love them.
Spread some love. And everybody say peace. Peace out, guys.
Peace, peace, peace.
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 My headphones up.
Spaghetti, 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 spaghetti.